I'm Taylor Holbrooks, host of Morning Edition. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make live streams like this one difficult to keep going. Stand up for public media and help fortify WYPR's future. Tell your member of Congress you support WYPR by visiting protectmypublicmedia.org, and thanks.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. My first guest today is Maryland Comptroller Brooke Learman. Maryland's state budget is being challenged in ways unimagined in recent times. This year, the General Assembly faced a double whammy, a deficit of more than $3 billion, and the specter of significant cuts in funding from the federal government. Earlier this month, Governor Wes Moore announced $400 million in additional spending reductions to a budget that already represented significant belt tightening. There are consequences to the state's fiscal challenges. For the first time in more than 50 years, Moody's downgraded Maryland's bond rating, citing, quote, heightened vulnerability to shifting federal policies and employment. Two other ratings agencies, Fitch and S&P, maintained a AAA rating for the state. Today, State Treasurer Derek Davis and state officials are offering $1.7 billion in bonds for sale. Whether or not the ratings downgrade from Moody's will affect that sale remains to be seen. And as we head into hurricane season, the comptroller has issued a report that gauges the financial impact of climate change, such as infrastructure damage, threats to human health, and workforce disruption. Comptroller Brooke Learman joins us on Zoom. Madam Comptroller, welcome back. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you. Thanks so much for having me.
So what's your take on the outlook for the state budget with each passing day? Do we get any closer to an understanding of what the federal cuts may entail and what the effect on the budget will be?
Certainly, we do. We are certainly very diligent in our review of the data that's coming to our agency. Partnering, of course, with folks in the Moore Miller administration, like at the Department of Labor and Department of Budget and Management, we continue to look at the withholding numbers that are coming in. So every month presents a new view on the layoffs that we're seeing, whether it's from private sector, where there are often WARN Act notices. The WARN Act requires private employers to give notice to the state about layoffs. So we've seen a huge, a big shift in WARN Act notices coming out. And on the federal side, it has been more of a trickle than a flood to date. And I think, that's good news both for our neighbors, right? But this is not just an existential crisis for us in Maryland. It is that because our federal government does such important work. But it also is affecting our neighbors, our family members, and our state budget. So it's really a triple hit in Maryland. So far, because we are seeing, things come down, but we are also trying to be patient because many people have taken the retirement packages. And so those won't expire sometimes until September. There are many court cases that have been filed by attorneys general, including Attorney General Brown, that are delaying some of the layoffs. And so we continue to hold out hope that those court cases will be upheld by appellate courts and people will retain their jobs. But it's a really scary, challenging place right now in Maryland where we have so many amazing federal workers doing such important work.
How do you approach planning for this? I mean, because, the latest forecast that you had for the Board of Estimates was from March. There'll be another one coming out in just a week or two.
In September.
In September. Okay. How do you, because when I talk to people in the Moore Miller administration, they tell me that one of the most frustrating parts of all of this is that things change from week to week. And when they talk to people in the Trump administration, they get different answers from people in different agencies and different departments. The White House will tell them one thing and Treasury will tell them another thing and Commerce will tell them another thing.
That is true.
So how are you all figuring that out? How do you navigate that?
It's a really important question. And we are trying to do it by being data driven because As you said, Doge may say one thing, but then a secretary or undersecretary may say something different, and the employees may say something even different from that. And so we are looking at the numbers. So the first thing that we're doing is every month we look at the withholding numbers that come in. So we see people's tax return numbers, right? We see what the employers are paying and what they're doing on withholding. We see sales tax numbers coming in. So that's one thing is every month we get a new data point that can help us frame the story. But second, we also realized we needed to collate all of the data that we have on the impact of the federal government on Maryland's economy and revenues writ large. And so we are working right now with the University of Maryland Smith School of Business to compile a full report on the different ways that Maryland receives federal money. So that's grant money. Since FY23, the state of Maryland has received more than $64 billion in hundreds of unique federal grants, like over 700 different grants. We have almost a quarter of a million jobs supported by federal contract dollars. We have over 160,000 federal civilian jobs based in Maryland, and we have almost a quarter of a million people who get withholding, who get wages from the federal government, and that doesn't include sort of top secret, those with top secret clearance or military personnel. So there is a big footprint in Maryland, as we all know, by the federal government. And we are now actually quantifying that and looking at funding over the last 10 years from the federal government so that our state government, our local governments have an overview and notes about how money is flowing from federal agencies to our counties, and to our states. That is really important for us to know, to have that baseline, so that we can start measuring the changes, both for a revenue standpoint, and so the more Miller administration, the Commerce Department, our local, economic development agencies like the BDC and others, like know where to spend their resources when there are cuts.
When I talked to the governor, I just talked to him yesterday, I guess. We were talking mostly about Vincent Schiraldi and the Department of Juvenile Services. We didn't have that long to chat, but on other occasions, we talk about the governor has made a point of saying, look, for generations, Maryland has been so dependent on the federal government for grants and contracts, as well as employment of the residents. And as you mentioned, there are, there's like, I think it's 161,000 contractors and federal employees live in the state of Maryland. And he talks about how we need to wean ourselves off of dependence on the federal government. So he talks about, uplifting new industries, tech, quantum, that kind of stuff. How do you go about weaning yourself off the
That's a good
federal
question.
government when we are, in such close proximity to Washington, D.C.?
Look, I think it's been a symbiotic relationship, actually. We have had a happy marriage for decades, where, the federal government has benefited from having Maryland workers, many educated in our public schools, at our universities, living in our neighborhoods, close to the agencies where they are. The federal government and the rest of the country has benefited from Maryland workers and from, Marylanders who are working and dedicating their lives to public service. And so I like to think of it less as a dependency and more as a symbiotic relationship. In turn, the federal government has provided, great work opportunities and good pay, right? Federal workers make more on average in Maryland than our private sector employees. So, and that's really been where the growth in our economy has been through the pandemic. As the federal government expanded, the private sector did not. And so the governor is right. We have to figure out now that that happy marriage is, it's not as happy as it used to be. I hope that we prevail in court and that we continue to see investment in NIH and at CMS and Social Security and all of our health and defense agencies that exist in Maryland that are so important to our nation, frankly, not just to Maryland, but to our nation. But also, we need to diversify, right? I mean, and this has happened across the country, right? Texas, totally dependent on oil and gas, but now they are the largest producer of renewable energy in the country as well, right? There is diversification that happens. And so the more Miller administration has, I think smartly identified key industries that already where we already have that already have a foothold in Maryland, where we have universities that are producing the best and the brightest and great private sector companies already, where we can really double down and say, this is where we are going to invest. Please, land your business here, grow your business here, come and work in this space here. So I think that diversification is really important and necessary.
Given the data that you digest on a regular basis, is this a good time to be looking for a job if you're a federal employee and you've been laid off? Because the layoffs have not just been in the federal sector.
No.
You know,
Oh, no, they're in the private
Global
sector.
Refuge, a
Sure.
nonprofit
Yeah.
that, resettles
Yeah.
refugees, laid off 400 people last month.
Chicago,
Chicago,
Catholic Relief
yeah,
Services.
exactly.
Yeah.
And
Yep.
many of these are in districts that the district you represented when you were in the legislature.
Yep. They are.
Is
Yep.
this what's the employment outlook for folks who are on the job market right now?
It's a good question. And I think actually our private sector is growing at a quicker clip than it was a few years ago, which is really good to see. But of course, there's so much uncertainty in the world, right? Let alone, just setting sort of Maryland's economy aside right now, there are many national companies that are headquartered in Maryland and startups that are headquartered in Maryland that are growing or want to grow. But, with tariffs and, fiscal uncertainty at the federal level and challenges that are beyond our control in Maryland, those present some hurdles. And so, when I do talk to us ahead, I've been doing roundtables, our revenue estimates and I and our we've been doing our estimators, our economists and I have been doing roundtables with business leaders across the state to hear from them. Are you growing? Are you looking to grow? Are you hiring? How are your revenue projections? What's keeping you up at night? That helps us complete a more accurate picture of what our revenue estimates should be and the direction the state economy is going. And I do, I would say some folks are like, yep, we're hiring. We're excited to be hiring federal workers. And other places are, we're really uncertain about where things are going. We're not ready to double down yet. We're not ready to grow. Right now, we're just trying to keep the lights on. So different companies are in different spaces. I'll say it's the state level. We have been excited to have some really amazing federal workers come into state into the Office of the Comptroller. I wish we could pay them more, but they are fantastic. And my stat director is from the federal government. I know we're looking to hire some IRS former IRS employees, and we're excited about being able to bring in some great people who have lost their jobs, unfortunately. At the feds.
And the federal cuts are a large part of the reason that Moody's, one of three credit agencies that rates the credit rating of the state of Maryland, downgraded Maryland for the first time since 1972. We
Yep.
went from AAA to AA1. How big a downgrade is that? And what's the impact? What will that cost the state in terms of borrowing, et cetera?
It's an important question. Of course, two of the three rating agencies did affirm our credit rating at AAA. I think Moody's was on a little bit of a mission. It wasn't just us, it was also DC and then the country that they downgraded. But we will know in a matter of in an hour or so what the interest rates that we will be charged are and if they do change based on Moody's rating. I think no state, including Maryland, has defaulted on its rating agency payment or on its payments, I should say, to bondholders in decades. So I think our bondholders should sleep well at night knowing that we pay our debts. And so my hope is that what Moody's has done will not impact our interest rates, but TBD in just a little bit.
Yeah, because the state is about to have a sale of bonds, about $1.7
Exactly.
billion, and Derek Davis, the state treasurer, takes care of that. So we'll find out soon. You wrote a piece for USA Today with your counterpart in New Mexico, the comptroller of the state of New Mexico, about the impact of the stock troubles that Tesla has had, Elon Musk's electric car company. Of course, Mr. Musk, a very controversial part of the Trump administration. He's the genius behind Doge, et cetera, and all these rampant cuts that have been. been done in a very disorganized way. But when his company has troubles, that affects the pension system. That's something that's also part of your portfolio. How concerned are you about that kind of situation?
Yeah, you know, we have our retirement system does hold Tesla stock as many and Tesla shares through funds as many state pensions do. And so, you know, I think it's really important that we stand up and we say on behalf of our beneficiaries that we're not going to tolerate this type of irresponsible behavior from a CEO, but also from a board of directors, right? Because at the end of the day, Tesla's board of directors is responsible for holding Elon Musk accountable regarding his position in that company. It is the board that has to stand up and say, we are going to look out for the interest of this company, regardless of anything else. And they just have not done that. And so, you know, we can't invest further in companies, both that have declining shares prices, but also that don't have responsible governance structures in place. You know, we have to be really cognizant of that. And I think it's, you know, both the New Mexico treasurer and I and many other state financial officers, we sent a letter to the Tesla board that has not been answered, sort of demanding answers about what their plans are to get this right. And, you know, we expect to see any day now them file a proxy statement, which is sort of what shareholders will vote on. And then they'll have their annual meeting later this summer. And, you know, I expect my fellow state financial officers from around the country and I that we will continue standing up on behalf of our beneficiaries and behalf of workers everywhere who have money invested and in retirement savings invested in this company with a board that isn't doing what it needs to do. And so, you know, I certainly would not advocate for us investing further in them ever at this point. But we also have to make sure we're doing what we can to protect the investment we have.
If you've just joined us, it's midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest is the Comptroller of the State of Maryland, Brooke Learman. So, Madam Comptroller, something like a holding of a very volatile stock, which has lost a lot of its value over the past few months, does that affect the credit rating? I mean, when Moody's downgraded the state of Maryland, and as you mentioned, we weren't the only state when they even downgraded the entire country, they did give a warning in that when they maintained the AAA bond rating the last time, they did it with a negative outlook. This time they've downgraded to AA1 with a stable outlook. How do we get it back to AAA with a stable outlook? What do you think it's going to take? And do things like the pension fund holdings affect the bond rating as well?
Certainly, they look at all of our assets because all of them are debts on our books. But the Tesla holding itself is too small within our portfolio to have any sort of real impact. So they wouldn't see that. We are continuing to make the investments from the state budget that we need into our pension system so that we are getting to a place where we are more, you know, we want, our goal is to be 100% funded, but the real, you know, we want to at least be 80% funded. And we're very, you know, we're getting closer and closer to that. And I'm, you know, it's an honor to serve on that board and to make sure that we are investing what we need to for our beneficiaries. But it's, you know, I think the General Assembly and the governor took strong action this year to help reduce our structural deficit, you know, not just balancing the budget this year, but thinking about how we can balance the budget over the long term. And is there still work to do? Yeah, there's always going to be work to do. You know, nothing is ever stable forever because the U.S. economy changes and jobs change and costs rise, right? That's one of the other things that my agency is very focused on. We've started some reports on rising costs, right? Whether it's transit, we put out a report on transit costs. We published a report on climate costs. We'll be looking at school construction costs next, because these are costs, but they're also important investments, right? We have to make sure that we're continuing to invest in the infrastructure in the state as well.
We have an email from a listener, Tom, in Mount Vernon. He's a regular listener, and we're grateful for that. He says, will the tightening of the belt of the state and federal government impact the rebuild of the Key Bridge and its financing? Can you comment on that?
It's a great question. And to date, I have not seen any evidence that there is any changes happening in federal funding for the Key Bridge. Certainly, that was in the budget bill that was passed last year. And so as far as I'm aware, the money is still there. And certainly it's a huge and important project at the state level as well. And they're working as expeditiously as possible, I know, at the Maryland Transportation Authority to keep those contracts moving and to get that bridge up out of the water, build a new bridge, I mean. Certainly it impacts all of us in the Baltimore region. Traffic is not ideal, but it's when you take 30,000 cars off a bridge and try to put them on the other roads, that's what happens. And I experience it daily as well. But certainly that's a key project that is continuing.
You mentioned your series of state spending reports, and you mentioned the one on climate change in our last few minutes here. Can you give us the sort of top line takeaways from what you studied when it came to the costs of making sure the state is climate resilient, and what the cost would be if we don't do anything, if we don't take any action?
Yeah, absolutely. So on Earth Day, we released a climate change costs report, which outlines categories and types of costs that are associated with climate change, including the costs that are connected to actions that will help us address climate change impacts, and also the cost of inaction, right? Because that has a cost as well. If you think about it, Maryland experienced 85 extreme weather events between 1980 and 2024, and the costs for that were between $10 and $20 billion, according to NOAA. And 27 of those were in 2024 alone, and that cost us, billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars. So we have to take action, and there are significant costs of doing nothing, but there's also a cost to rebuilding and to building in a more resilient way, implementing mitigation policies, but then also rebuilding some of our infrastructure. Like if you think about the Inner Harbor, right? I mean, it hasn't been rebuilt since it was built. And just throughout Maryland, whether it's encroachment on farmland, or whether it's rising costs of dealing with storms. There's a lot of work to do. And so we are continuing to work and research this because it is such an essential issue that we just have to keep at the forefront to make sure we're building a state that is secure and resilient, when we pass it on to our kids and grandkids.
You mentioned data from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. There have been lots of cuts in that agency. There have
So
been
many cuts.
cuts at the National Weather Service. There's cuts at the Labor Department, the Commerce Department.
Yeah, everywhere.
Are you confident in the data that you are getting from the federal government? Can you trust it?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, all of this is data that came to us before the cuts. I think one of the things that's going to happen is that we will get data, but there will be much less of it. Maybe it won't be as timely. My hope is that the people who remain, they're still dedicated to doing this work and helping states prepare. But you're right. I mean, I think there are some things that if you just don't have the people to do it, you cannot make that weather forecast in a timely way that could save lives. You cannot produce the data in a timely way that would be meaningful. We need people to do this work. And we need it at the federal level, and we frankly need it at the state level, right? I mean, I need people to answer phones and to process taxes and to analyze our procurement dollars, right? We need people to do this work. And so, I salute all of our public servants at the federal and state and local levels. This is important and essential work. And I'm really proud to be able to lead an agency of 1,200 people trying to get things done for Marylanders.
It's awfully early. The deadline for people filing their taxes was just, 6 weeks ago or whenever. But are there any indications in terms of state revenue from people's income taxes for this year? Are they are, did, Does it look like we're on track to get what the legislature estimated we would get for this year?
That's a great question. And the last numbers that we saw, which the last complete were from April, so a complete month of withholding. We see it monthly, and we were on track meeting our revenue estimate. And so then the next time we do a complete and official revenue estimate will be September, but we were on track, to meet our revenue estimate as of April, and I think in May's numbers that I saw as well. So, we are feeling, I don't want to say that we're confident. I feel good about the numbers and what our revenue estimate was and where we will be in September. I do believe we will meet that estimate, which is, of course, the first big step in making sure that our FY26 budget is balanced.
That's the Comptroller of the State of Maryland, Brooke Learman. Thank you, Madam Comptroller. Always a pleasure, and I look forward to having you back and keeping in touch.
Yes, likewise. Thanks for all you do.
Up next, Coach Bob Babb, who has just retired after 46 years as the coach of the Johns Hopkins University Blue Jays baseball team. We'll talk about his legendary career on the other side of a quick break when Midday continues. If you are a former player for Coach Babb, a fan, a fellow coach with Coach Babb at Johns Hopkins, we'd love to hear from you. 410-662-8780 or email midday@wypr.org. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.